Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. On Tuesday, March 18th, a crowd of people gathered outside St. Louis's 59-year-old jail. Called the Medium Security Institution, the jail was better known as the Workhouse. The nickname was a reference to an even earlier jail that put its inmates through hard labor. But on that day, 2 months ago, the Workhouse got a new description: demolished. You're listening to the sound of that demolition as a heavy extractor tears down sections of wall, metal, and roof. For the people watching this moment, it was a welcome sight after years of activism. As the walls came down, they celebrated. But the physical destruction of the Workhouse was only one side of the story. The jail could hold up to 1,000 people at a time. A staggering number of people suffered there, facing extreme heat and mold, leaking roofs, and infestations. Some of those people have taken their cases to court. Earlier this month, the city of St. Louis agreed to pay a $4 million settlement over claims of abuse. There are still steps before that settlement is finalized, but it could affect as many as 16,000 people. To talk about what that settlement means and how St. Louis got to this point, I'm joined by two people who played key roles in this story. Blake Strode, executive director of the civil rights law firm Arch City Defenders. Blake, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
And we also have Inez Bordeaux, who is also with Arch City. She is deputy director of community collaborations there. Inez, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we're going to talk a little bit later about the details of that $4 million settlement. But first, I'd like to go back to 2017, which is a key year in this story. Now, Blake, you were 2 years into leading Arch City Defenders at that point. What brought your attention to the Workhouse?
Yeah. Well, you know, I just have to start by sending lots of love to everyone impacted by the storms. I listened to your interview with Gloria, and I know so many people are suffering, and people in communities that are always impacted. So, you know, there's a real direct tie between communities impacted by the Workhouse and those that we see impacted by this storm. In 2017, for us, as you said, we were doing a lot of work that really was focused on the municipal legal system in St. Louis. And through that work, we were learning more and more about local policing, courts, and jails. And one major element of that has always been the function of bail and cash bail as a driver of pretrial detention. And so part of what brought this focus on the Workhouse was understanding that actually the facility in the region that was most responsible for holding people pretrial on cash bail that they couldn't afford to pay was the Workhouse. Mm-hmm. And you layer on top of that the stories that have existed in St. Louis for decades about horrible inhumane conditions and suffering inside of the jail. That really, I think, raised the stakes around identifying the Workhouse as a site of suffering. Mm-hmm. And that was brought into the spotlight that summer in 2017 when we had a heat wave and people were literally screaming outside of their cells that they were burning, that they couldn't breathe.
Was there a pattern in what you were hearing from people who found themselves stuck in the Workhouse? Because as I understand, you were initially focused on getting people out of there, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the first thing we actually did that was focused on the Workhouse was a series of community bailouts. And we were working with our partners at Action St. Louis. This was just before the Bail Project actually came and sort of institutionalized bailouts in St. Louis. We were just raising money. Action was sort of facilitating this. We were bailing people out. And as we were connecting with people who were being bailed out, we were hearing these stories over and over and over again. And they were just so strikingly consistent about the insects and rodents and extreme temperatures and broken sewage. And that led us to recognize that there was something really systemic going on that required a systemic response.
Mm-hmm. And as in 2016, you spent 30 days in the workhouse, and this is connected to a criminal charge for overdrawing unemployment benefits. And I should mention here that those charges were eventually dropped. That is not on your record any longer. But you became one of the loudest voices demanding the closure of the St. Louis jail. How is it that you became involved in that movement?
I did spend 30 days in the workhouse in 2016, and I am a former client of Arch City Defenders. Mm-hmm. And so once Arch City in Action and the Bail Project St. Louis and more decided that they were going to start a campaign to close the jail, I got a call from Michael John Voss, one of the attorneys that worked at Arch City at the time. And he was like, Inez, we're starting this campaign to close the workhouse. Are you interested? And I said, hell yeah, I'm interested. Mm-hmm. And so I just started showing up at the meetings and continued showing up. Because those 30 days that I spent at the workhouse, I got to see that everything that we had heard about the workhouse was absolutely true. It wasn't being sensationalized. The facility is infested with rats and roaches. It does have black mold growing on the walls. The sewage does back up into the places where people being detained there, you know, without bail were being held. And I was mad. I was mad about what I experienced there, and I was mad about the hundreds of other people. I was in a pod with 50 other women and sitting around watching, like, women have to experience those conditions. I was mad, and Arch City Defenders and the campaign started gave me somewhere to put all of that anger.
Mm-hmm. And seeing and being with those women was really a part of that anger too, right? Because you were seeing how they were supporting one another?
Yeah, like the other 49 women that I were housed with were like mothers who had done theft trying to, you know, provide food or rent or a place to stay. It was sex workers. It was women suffering with substance abuse disorder that all needed help and resources. And instead, we were being held in a facility not fit for human habitation.
Mm-hmm. In 2017, Blake, Arch City Defenders filed a lawsuit against the city of St. Louis over the claims of, or over claims of abuse in the workhouse jail, much of what Inez has been describing. How is it that you got to that point of filing a lawsuit, mm-hmm. and what was the objective of mm-hmm. that at that time?
Yeah, well, as I said, we were hearing such consistent stories about what was happening inside of the jail and the conditions that existed inside of the jail, that we determined that there were grounds for constitutional civil rights claims. And so we filed this class action lawsuit in November of 2017, outlining all of the conditions that you hear Inez describing, as well as some others. And the aim of that lawsuit really was twofold. We were asking both for damages or money for the people that had suffered inside of the jail. And at the time, we also had what are called injunctive claims. So in our case, we were asking that the jail be closed, that we thought it could not possibly be brought within constitutional compliance. And so our view was that it needed to be closed or at least mandated to operate under a different set of conditions. And over time, eventually, you know, and I know we're talking about 8 years of work here, over time, those injunctive claims sort of took a back seat and eventually became moot because the jail was emptied out. Mm-hmm. And what survived were the damages claims.
Right. We're talking today about St. Louis's now closed workhouse jail and a recent $4 million settlement reached between the city of St. Louis and people detained there. I'm here with Blake Strode, who's the executive director of the civil rights law firm Arch City Defenders, and Inez Bordeaux. She's Arch City's deputy director of community collaborations. So reaching that settlement, you've just mm-hmm. mentioned 8 years. Yeah. Inez, what was it like to wait that long? I mean, does it in some ways feel like it was not that long, given how long the jail had been holding people and doing so under such just awful conditions?
When you say it like that, yes, 8 years is a long time, but in terms of like effort and organizing to close a jail, it really wasn't that long. The Close the Workhouse campaign operated for about three and a half years. Mm-hmm. And by the time the campaign slowed down, like there were less than 100 people in the jail. And a year later, the jail was empty. So the jail has been sitting empty since the summer of 2022. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at it that way, it's like in 4.5 years, we managed to, you know, empty out a jail, leave it empty for multiple years, and then gotten to a point of demolition in 8 years. Mm-hmm. And I find that to be incredibly impressive.
Yeah, yeah. No, the jail was closed in 2021. Mm-hmm. Like, how is it that you reached that particular agreement? I mean, what were the negotiations like with the Jones administration?
You mean in 2021?
Yes, in 2021.
Well, remember, Mayor Jones had just entered office, and one of the major campaign issues in 2021 was the fate of the workhouse. And to her credit, she was, I think, the first prominent public official in St. Louis, really, that had called for the closure of the workhouse, I believe, back in 2017. Mm-hmm. And so that was a commitment she made on the campaign trail when she was elected. She followed through by defunding the jail, emptying it out. Some people remember there was a period when the CJC was experiencing, it still is experiencing, significant challenges, and we have a whole other lawsuit focused on the CJC. Mm-hmm. But when those issues were materializing, there was a period where the workhouse became the CJC annex and had some overflow from the CJC. And then, as Inez said, by summer of 2022, it was completely emptied out. No one's been in the building since. Yeah. So, you know, we've always had this overlap between what's happening with the litigation, which has been continuing sometimes in the background, continuing since 2017, and the Close the Workhouse campaign and the advocacy efforts outside of the lawsuit that mm-hmm. were also achieving some of the successes that Inez named.
Right. Now, closing the workhouse was a major goal, as mm-hmm. you've mentioned, of former St. Louis Mayor Tishara Jones. And on Monday, producer Danny Wisentowski talked with her about that moment and watching the workhouse finally come down.
It was quite emotional. It was actually more emotional than I thought I would be. Because, again, it may seem symbolic to some, but being able to actually tear down an edifice that had caused so much harm to so many people, and then some of those people that were there to see it come down, is something that I'll forever keep as one of my memories of when I was in office.
And that was former St. Louis Mayor Tishara Jones on Monday. She also said that she hopes to see a memorial marker placed on that land, one that, quote, recognizes the harm that happened while people were there. Inez, is a memorial something you would like to see placed there? And if so, what would that look like?
I wouldn't mind seeing a memorial marker at the site. I think it's important for us to understand the historical significance of not just having a jail like that, but the power, the people power it took to get us to a point to where it no longer existed. Me personally, I feel like outside of a memorial marker to honor the legacy of the workhouse and the people that survived it and the families of those who didn't survive being in the workhouse, what we really need is to put our efforts toward getting the Memorial Community Resource Hub mm-hmm. off the ground, fully funded and operating in the city. Mm-hmm. Through the organizing that we've done with the Close the Workhouse campaign and the relationships I've built with many, many, many people who survived the workhouse, what we recognized or what we came to understand was the through line between all of us ending up in the workhouse was an unmet need. Mm-hmm. And the city, with the resources it does provide, it's very just disjointed all across the city, and it's very difficult to get your needs met all in one place, all at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so if we build and fund the community or the Memorial Community Resource Hub, it gives the city an opportunity to service the most amount of people and making sure that all of those needs can be met. And that is how we reduce crime and incarceration, not just in St. Louis, but everywhere.
Are there a couple of needs that you can point to that are particularly urgent and maybe that are related to the experience that you had yourself, you know, what landed you in the workhouse to begin with, and what you also were seeing, particularly among the women that you were incarcerated with?
Yeah, the thing that ended me up in the workhouse is I overdrew unemployment benefits. I was fleeing a domestic violence situation, and there was nowhere for me and my four children to go. And additionally, this was back in like the late 90s, I could not afford my childcare. Or the late 2010s. I could not afford my childcare. I was bringing home $2,800 a month, but my daycare was $1,600 a month, and I made $56, too much to qualify for state assistance. Mm-hmm. So when I think about those two things, housing is always at a premium in St. Louis. It is the foundation of families and therefore the foundation of societies. So making sure that everyone has access to safe, affordable housing should be one of thy priorities, in addition to making sure folks like me who just barely missed the mark to qualify for assistance that's needed, that $56 that I made too much to qualify for state assistance for childcare was detrimental, not just to my life, but mm-hmm. my children's life, and completely derailed 7 years of my life yeah. that I can't get back.
Mm-hmm. I think this is a good segue to this settlement mm-hmm. decision. And the settlement does cover anyone who is detained 5 or more days mm-hmm. any time between November 13th, 2012 through June 2022. How much would each person receive, Blake, if this settlement is approved by a judge?
Mm-hmm. So let me say a couple of things about the settlement. One is just that it is, it's a credit. I want to make sure I name our plaintiffs and class reps in this case, James Cody. There are six of them. James Cody, Eddie Williams, Corleone Barnes, Michael Mosley, Deidre Wortham, and Jasmine Borden. And we keep seeing 8 years, 8 years, and they have persevered in this litigation for 8 years. So I think we all owe them a great debt. Also, I want to underscore that the settlement is subject to review and approval by the federal court. So we filed for preliminary approval, but all of the details I'm about to share are subject to approval by a federal judge. Mm-hmm. And so that's the next step in this litigation. But as you said, there are roughly, we estimate about 16,000 people in the class. $4 million is the total settlement amount. The amount that people will receive will be determined by two things. One is the number of days they've spent in the jail, because it will be a per diem allocation. And the other, under the terms that we've proposed to the court, is based on the number of people who file claims. And so there's this inverse relationship where the lower the claims rate, the higher the effect of per diem, and vice versa. So obviously the first thing people want to know when they hear about a settlement like this is, how much could I get under the settlement? And frustratingly, that's impossible to say at this mm-hmm. moment, but that's how it will be distributed.
Yeah. So in this calculus of compensation, if we call it that, Inez, you are included among that group of individuals who were detained, you know, in that prescribed time. What does it feel like to weigh the experiences that you went through against money? Mm-hmm. I mean, what would be fair to you?
I'm not sure the city of St. Louis has enough money to make up for the way I was treated inside of the workhouse. There is no amount of money that they could give me that would make up for watching women pick roaches out of their food, for watching and experiencing the ways that we were treated by correctional officers and treated like something, we are something that they scraped off the bottom of their shoe. There is no amount of money that could, that they could give me for watching women having medical emergencies and not having access to medical care. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm excited about the settlement of the lawsuit, and I am incredibly happy that we, that the people who survived will get something, but it's not enough.
Mm-hmm. Blake, your focus is the lawsuit. Mm-hmm. Does that legal effort have any impact on what happens with the workhouse and then the land itself?
Well, one of the terms that was very important to our clients and to us is a commitment by the city that the workhouse will never again be used to detain people. And you know, that is a longstanding belief of our clients that it should not have been before and that it should not be again. And as you said, we're now watching the gradual demolition. It's now come a long way, that demolition of the workhouse, to ensure that even further. And so I think that is a major achievement. Where we go from here, you know, the litigation has certain limitations. You know, you can get damages, you can get injunctive relief, and everything else is in the public policy sphere, in the political sphere, and that's why people like Inez have been so central to really expanding the range of what is possible in mm-hmm. this space, and I think we'll continue to do that with our partners, but the litigation itself is really focused on trying to get some money in people's mm-hmm. pockets.
In our last 30 seconds, Inez, we started the conversation about the demolition of the workhouse on March 18th, and you were there. What was that moment like for you?
Exhilarating. It was exhilarating. It felt very empowering because while I always knew it, and I never thought otherwise, I always knew the workhouse would be closed. But to be the person that gets to say, okay, start the demolition and watch it come down, just proves to me that the power of the people is undefeated.
Inez Bordeaux is Deputy Director of Community Collaborations at Arch City Defenders, and Blake Strode is Executive Director of that civil rights law firm. Blake and Inez, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.